Welcome to Story Break, the Writer's Room podcast, where three swarthy Hollywood individuals...
Three brothers united by fate, divided swarthy. By war.
...have an hour to come up with a pitch for an awesome movie. My name is Freddie Wong.
I'm Will Campos, and I'm a screenwriter. I was going to try to do a funny joke, but I don't have one.
And I'm Matt Arnold, and you two know who I am. What, 10 years it's been, and now you just pretend you don't know me? We had the same mentor, damn it!
Right now, Matt, Freddie, and I are all pointing two guns at each other as doves fly about and bombastic music plays, because it's finally, after hundreds of episodes, it's time for heroic bloodshed. It's heroic bloodshed week on Story Break.
It's like Shark Week.
What's
nice
about, I can say whatever week that we do the episode is Story Break that week, because we only do one thing per week. So it's technically Heroic Bloodshed Week.
Before we get all into it, let me just do quickly for those who don't know what Heroic Bloodshed is. It's a genre of Hong Kong action cinema loosely. Like, it could be used for many things. It's a pretty loose term. And also, I think it was coined by a white writer in some magazine in the 90s, so it's like not like an official thing. But essentially, heroic bloodshed is a Hong Kong crime genre that is operatic and usually involves criminals and police officers that both have strong codes of ethics and like strong morals, and it's usually about brotherhood and loyalty, and in the end their problems is all solved via gunfights.
It's like, emotions and bullets. People call it blood opera which gives you a pretty good idea of what's going on.
Yeah,
in
blood
opera
is probably even better.
And the guy who coined the term described the genre as a Hong Kong action film that features a lot of gunplay and gangsters rather than kung fu. Lots of blood, lots of action.
If you've seen John Woo is the quintessential, most well-known heroic bloodshed director. You may also know Shu Hark and Ringo Lam and
Johnny
and Benny Chan, Johnny Toe, a lot of these people. In America, the closest you probably get is a John Woo movie like Face Off is pretty
close
to
it. It is essentially
tell
me if I'm talking out my ass here, but in Hong Kong cinema, it's the modern response to like the wushu genre.
Yes.
Right? Like that's like kind of their Western. It's like that's set in the past. It's historical. It's a lot of swashbuckling. This is like that kind of action and emotion, but in a modern crime aesthetic.
Yes, because those movies are also like a lot of wushu movies are also about similar themes and kind of operatic, you know, emotional, very chamber drama-esque plot lines kind of extrapolated into big fight scenes.
So let's talk about why this week. Why don't you guys talk about the latest movie you saw down at the Cineplex?
Well, we can talk about what we just saw. Also, I just want to say that this is going to be a tough one because I think of all the things we've ever broken, this is probably the first one I care about. No, but like... This is like a white whale. Like, this is what, I mean, I think Will as well, but this is definitely what Freddie and I first bonded over in film school.
This is what all three of us bonded over.
This is why I went to, this is why I wanted to make movies, was Heroic Bloodshed. Like, Heroic Bloodshed is probably the most foundational aspect of my creative career alongside, like, Lord of the Rings and Zelda. Like, those are the trio. Like, I wanted to do John Woo movies my entire life. So this is stressful because I'm like, this is what someday I would love to make this.
Yes. And this week in particular, you guys just saw this movie, Raging Fire.
Yes.
The final film by Hong Kong blood opera master Benny Chan.
R.I.P. Benny Chan. If you don't know, watch some of his movies. He did a few Jackie Chan movies, but he also definitely dabbled in the heroic bloodshed genre with movies like White Storm and Raging Fire, which we just saw is very much in that world.
Wait, White Storm was Benny Chan?
The first White Storm, not the second one. He did the first one. Which we haven't seen, which we should go see. The second one was awesome. The second one was fucking blood opera as hell, I'll tell you what. Just two men on train tracks just pointing bullets at each other. They're both already dead, but they're just telling each other how they feel with bullets.
So this is like one of our favorite genres. And really the reason why we want to tackle this is it really feels like this flavor of action is so sorely missing from our modern palette. Like, in a way that really bums me out, because I got into movies because of films like The Killer and Hard Boiled and all of these like Hong Kong action movies. And I thought that like I would look around and be like, everyone thinks this is the most awesome thing in the world, right? And yet I think they don't, or they're doing a different thing. And it's just like, in my opinion, I feel like the current slate of action movies that we have, it's like they're fun to watch, but they're soulless, they're emotionless. And Heroic Bloodshed has all of those elements in spades. And well, like, I love it.
It's what's interesting is that I do think American cinema has clearly been inspired by these movies.
100%.
Like, but I think it is the aesthetic and it's the texture. It's like the, Chow Yun-Fat diving with two guns. Then you see everyone's got two guns for a while.
Well, Quentin Tarantino took the look of Better Tomorrow for Reservoir Dogs, the like men in suits and the black
glasses. To mention the entire plot of City on Fire, the Ringo Lam movie.
But like, they took that aesthetic. like, oh, cool. It's a bunch of like super soulless like assassins with sunglasses that can just like kill people. And they miss the whole part where like the men are screaming and crying before they shoot each other because they love each other more than.
So I'll tell you one of my favorite things every time I go see an early Wu movie with a crowd in America, like The Killer in particular. Yeah. Like the number of times I've seen The Killer with an American audience. And the unbridled emotion of it plays almost comedically for the first half to a Western audience that's not coming. You see a lot of uncomfortable laughter around like how sincere and like to us almost feels campy, like the way that it plays. Like it is a soap opera. But then what's great is like you slowly watch the laughter stop because people can't help but get it. Like, and by the time you get to the end, it's tragic. And like that kind of unbridled emotion. Again, I think you're right, Freddie. I don't think we like in our modern like how we feel about action movies now, we don't really know what to do with it.
And then let me just give you a perfect example, and you know, not spoiling anything from Raging Fire, which was a blast, and Donnie Yen, who is, by the way, when you watch it, you're like, this is a man in his 50s, I believe, who is moving better than any action hero you've seen in any Marvel movie in this past decade.
I'm gonna try not to be too negative. Everybody's like, I mean, I love Keanu, but everybody's like, oh, Keanu. It's like Keanu moves like an old man. Like, compare that to Donnie Yen. It's like Donnie Yen's a man who's taken this seriously his entire life, and you watch him fight in this movie, you're like, this is like Fred Astaire.
Yeah.
And like, so what, and like Keanu Reeves. Let me challenge you.
Let me challenge you, the listener, with an image. And ask yourself if you've seen this in a movie. And you know, I could be proven wrong. But the end of this movie, the hero and the bad guy stare at each other at the end of their confrontation. And they're both like crying. And then it starts to flashback through all the moments of brotherhood they shared together. And it's like, when do you think John Wick cries?
And they don't kill each other. Literally, one is like they're both the battle's over, and one of them just like asks him a question. It's like, if you were in the same position I was, would you have done anything different? And they just stare at each other, tears in their eyes, and Diane just walks away, shaking his head like, you didn't learn anything. And the other man just like steps back and kills himself. It's like, that's drama. Like, that's so fucking good. It's like, what's the end of John Wick? It's like, it's a super fan who's like, I could beat you.
All right.
No, because it's important to talk about the flaws. Here's what Freddie's getting at. This is why I love Heroic Bloodshed. And this is why I think, frankly, like most American action movies have essentially lost their way since, I don't know, like the peak of Michael Bay with like The Rock and then like Face Off, is in my mind, action is the greatest form of cinema. It is also stupid as fuck. In the same way that musical sequences, I think, is one of the purest forms of cinema. Also, it's also stupid as fuck. Mm-hmm. But you know what? Musical is smart. You don't ever see a musical that doesn't justify the reason for people to start singing. There's never just like people walking around and being like, you know what? I kind of don't like my wife. I'm going to sing a song about it. No. It is like, my life is over. Here's a song about it. American action movies like John Wick, when they get into a gunfight, it's like, it's just perfunctory. Like, you could never. Here's to me the key of a good action sequence. Pause before the bullets start. Could you write a song about the sequence that's about to happen? And if you can't, if there's not two people in that gunfight that matter to each other enough that you could sing a musical number, you don't have any fucking business shooting bullets at each other, because those bullets are the most pure form of emotion you could ever have, which is literally drawing blood from another human being to say something. So, like, when I see John Wick go into the theater, I'm like, okay, like, he's mad because, like, William Dafoe's not his friend anymore. But, like, when you're watching Raging Fire, it's like, this is a man who just almost lost his wife and has failed as a mentor. And you could sing a song about this. And that's what you need in an action movie.
They often say in musicals, right? Like, it's like, when the emotion gets too high for talking, they sing. When the emotion gets too high for singing, they dance. Mm-hmm. I think that should be true of action movies. When the emotion gets too high for talking, they fight. They fist fight.
American action movies are the opposite. It's when the emotion's gone too high that they're, like, uncomfortable. They just start shooting so they don't have to talk about it anymore. Whereas Hong Kong action movies, they let the emotion build and then the action starts.
Regardless, so we want to try our hand at this. This is a genre that is near and dear to all of our hearts. And we hope, you know, and we hope that we can maybe convince you at the end of this that, you know, this type of thing.
If you haven't been able to tell yet, this is a serious story. This isn't going to be one of those ones where the villain turns out to be a talking butt at the end. And, you know, like a wacky alien shows up. No, this is a serious story.
Okay, here's the other thing that's hard about the American cinema or Hollywood making these sort of movies. And frankly, it's, I think, one of the things that always scares me about our attempt to make this movie, because there is the one thing that kills any of these movies is irony or any sense of fourth wall breaking. In the same way a musical, like, the moment the abstract, like, it is a lie from the beginning. Like, it is people dancing and singing. So, like, that's why I was afraid of Schmigadoon, but I think they actually pull it off. But, like, you can't wink at the audience. That's why I love Equilibrium, because Equilibrium, unlike a lot of movies, like, it's got its problems, but like that, like Christian Bale's acting like is a fucking Oscar worthy movie. Like, he is just in it 100%. Like, Heroic Bloodshed has no irony.
I would even argue something like Hard Target with Jean-Claude Van Damme. Mm-hmm. That's someone taking what you might roll your eyes at as a fairly cliche plot. Rich people are using, you know,
they're hunting people for sport.
There's no joke in that movie.
There's no joke. Like, John Woo shoots the population of New Orleans with the same documentarian eye of empathy and like emotion that is almost startling to see in a movie that you would think is just like, oh, this is just a kind of dumb action movie. It's like, no, he really believes in this like plight between class warfare and all the symbolism of it. So the movie has to believe in itself, and it cannot turn away from its premise. It cannot be cowards against its own premise. I mean,
it's the same as if you watch any soap operas like Young and the Restless of Bold and Beautiful, they also is no irony. Like, you can't joke. Like, you can't make the audience think you're not taking it seriously, because literally the only thing you can hang on to is you convincing
is your sincerity
that this is real.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay.
We've laid out the challenge.
A heroic movie.
All right. So what are the, where do we,
so where do we start? Let me start with this. Well, let me start with this. What we're talking about is we're talking about the highest form of violence, the most intense form of violence, which is gun violence, which is like shooting at each other. Therefore, you need to at least, there's a reason why in Hong Kong heroic bloodshed movies, they are frequently cops and robbers, triads, yakuza, like mafia, that sort of thing. Because, and you know, cops, because these are the segments of society that do interact regularly with, you know, shootouts and that sort of thing. So it does feel like fundamentally this needs to be that kind of story. It needs to be set in that kind of world. It shouldn't be, you know, which is the opposite of this, which is, you know, a false universe that is a world where people are assassins and they kill each other, right? Like, I would argue stuff like, you know, John Wick and those worlds. It's like they're creating a comic book, almost superhero universe around that. These are set in a heightened
version. Well, yeah, but you're right that it is. But the way I would pin this down is that I think these movies are at their best where there's a clearly delineated moral axis.
Yes.
Like, there are good guys and bad guys. And again, so a lot of the space plays into ambiguity, right?
Yes.
Like, the bad guy is secretly good, the good guy is secretly bad. Like, the difference between a good guy and a bad guy can be blurred. Or again, like the...
And the perfect example would be Infernal Affairs, right? Which got turned into The Departed. But like, that sort of
or
thing...
Or likewise, The Killer.
Yeah.
And that Chow Yun-Fat is the perfect example of, he is a bad guy. He's an assassin. He feels guilty. He goes to church to atone for his sins. He is trying to do something heroic at the end, but he is still on the wrong side of the law. And then that's why this cop, who is dealing with like a lot of bad cops who are bureaucratic and corrupt, is trying to, you know, like wrestling with that.
I think also inherently most heroic bloodshed movies are in some form of tragedy, which is also pretty counter to American action movies.
Yes.
Which are pretty much
the good guy
fantasies.
Wins at the end. Yeah.
Again, famously, John Woo hates violence. Like, he's never shot a gun.
Yeah.
And like, those movies are badass.
This is the craziest thing since Beethoven writing his Ninth Symphony after he lost his hearing. Is John Woo not thinking violence is good and never firing a gun?
And that's why his movies often end with like people like
with the more. There's a cost to the violence.
Yes, like Chow Yun-Fat and the Killer is redeemed in the end, but he still pays for his sins and dies. It's also very, I mean, John Woo's very Christian. It's also very Christian. Like, he still pays for his sins. Whereas like definitely the American version of that movie would be like, he then pays for her eyesight and they get married.
And then it's also the cop, his friend, becomes a killer. He murders the bad guy in cold blood at the end and loses his job. Yeah, so like, anyway. All right, okay. So...
how do you do this in America?
That's
modern
a big question.
America.
Yeah, so like, if you're going to do a cops and robbers thing, which seems like the most... what's tough is just also speaking frankly, like the discourse around the police right now is like is such a big part of our conversation in a way that it wasn't, you know, in the heyday of these movies that I don't know if that's the right angle or not.
Well, dude, you brought this up, but like I would say a lot of heroic bloodshed movies do involve, I mean, it's tough because you're obviously making a good cop, but like they do often involve a corrupt police force. Like Raging Fire is like
the force.
The first, actually, it's such a good moment. Well, in Raging Fire, the first moment is like Donnie Yen is the straight laced cop and his friend calls him to some like quick like lunch and he shows up and he realizes it's like these criminals that like his son like knocked a guy out and they're like, hey, you can make this go away, right? It's like, it's not a big deal. Like, literally the cop is here saying he doesn't want to press charges. I just, you know, you gotta change your
gotta change your report.
And literally Donnie Yen's like, he looks at his tea and he takes one more sip of it. He's like, that's very expensive tea, isn't it? And they're like, yeah, it's like the best, it's like $6,000 a cup. He goes, I took two sips. He puts $200 down and walks away.
It's like, that should cover it.
So
and then
fucking
walks
rock
away.
And roll.
Like,
I'm not
so
even gonna,
rock and roll,
like,
dude.
You didn't give me anything. I'm paying for my own tea for this. So good. And it's like the police force is corrupt and like it's ultimately like that's okay. So I think you
it's
have to
okay
lean
that
into
crops
it.
Are
well, I mean, you have
grow.
To lean into it. It's about
so okay. So yes, to your point, we need to figure out like what are the sides, what is the drama.
Yeah. Yes,
and then importantly, I think a lot of these hinge on a relationship between two people on opposite axes of this,
yes.
right?
And could have been on the same axes. Like mm-hmm. that's what it is. It's about people realizing, like again, that's like that he's a killer in the end, also because he saw his friend die, and out of pure emotion, he murders a man. Yeah, right. Yeah, so it's they are people. Like we are all ultimately the same on different sides of the law. Like so, it's like what is the emotional
bank robbers? Is that a thing?
Yeah,
a crew
bank
of bank
for
robbers.
Sure.
Bank robbers is always fun, yeah. right? And it's like a
but
kind
it feels
of,
like a righteous cause, right? It's one thing because I think you
not
know,
necessarily like no,
that's
the.
Fair, that's fair.
Yeah. But I will say, I think one of the best examples of a bad guy in an American action movie that is closest to, I think, a bad guy in like a blood opera or a heroic bloodshed, I think they don't quite connect enough.
Right? 3, 2, 1. Ed Harris and The Rock?
Yeah. Okay. It's like, now in a John Woo movie, the relationship between Ed Harris and Sean Connery would probably been more built up. They probably would have met earlier. And then
you know what's interesting is I feel like actually the closest modern thing I can think of is that I feel like in Black Panther, Killmonger almost
gets it. Killmonger's
yes.
a
again,
good one.
Killmonger, yeah. and again, like the relationship, yeah. I don't think they quite get it there, but again, like, the, no. you want to talk about a moment where the two guys are crying at the end. I mean, like that scene
yes.
at the
yes.
end when Killmonger dies is what makes that movie great.
Yes,
and like
agreed.
The, yes, that is probably the closest I could see, although I think in Hong Kong, they would have built that relationship even
yeah.
more.
Which actually, I think, weirdly enough, I think actually heroic bloodshed movies are often not progressive, but they're more, I think they're actually smarter in the way they approach the morality of it, because what they are essentially saying is that individually, you can have the same ethics, the same ideas of what's right and wrong, and systemically and where you're born or what happens or where you are
affects that, yeah.
changes what that ethical code makes you do. Like Killmonger and T'Challa, like they believe very much the same things, but they are come from different places and they're coming at it differently. And
which
like,
is
yes.
fundamentally tragic.
And
Ed right?
Harris is somebody who is like, he's a good military man who believes these people should be mm-hmm, right. And mm-hmm. you can sit there and be like, I understand why he is doing
yes.
this.
All right.
So.
Oh, it's hard. Oh, this is hard.
It's opera, baby.
All right. So let's start with, I don't even know where
friends,
to begin.
Friends, brothers.
I'm too close to it. This is like, that's the problem. Like when you don't give a shit about it, you can see it from
I
a
know.
Distance. You're like, all right, it's this, that, and the other. But like, this is like.
We got to find this like, okay, let's just start. We got to start finding
right,
this
right.
emotional
core. Robbers is interesting.
But like, give me like relationships, like two brothers who like lost like.
Two brothers with the same adoptee father. Yeah. I'm reminded
best
by those.
Put his friend in prison because he did something wrong. That's what you need. Something to hang on to.
All right. So let's say you've got this crew of bank robbers
mm-hmm.
and they are thick as thieves. Maybe that's the name of the movie.
Thick as thieves.
And they work for the mob, you know, and it's like they grew up together. Right. So like they're like this cohesive unit or whatever. But then on their first they go on a job, right, to mm-hmm. take out this bank and they kill an innocent person. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And then like that's the spin that starts your moral axis spiral. I think I'm just describing the plot of The Town. I don't know if you guys saw The Town was an attempt at this. It was a little too like, I don't know that it really quite worked, but again, like I think that was Ben Affleck chomping a bit of this flavor mm-hmm. as well.
Bank robbing's good because it's not like there's not serious systemic problems with like crime and drugs and poverty and things in like China and Hong Kong either, right? But they usually go with like a heightened sort of
criminality. It's a fantasy version of the cops
yeah,
and
it's,
robbers
it's
dynamic.
Usually big
yeah.
drug dealers or big bank robbers. It's like the less
I believe in
politically, you know,
it's like no bummers crime.
Yes, no bummers crime.
It's
yeah,
like
yeah,
me yeah, yeah, yeah. in I believe in A Better Tomorrow, it's all about counterfeit money.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's
yes.
another popular thing.
Yes.
To Live and Die in LA is probably another example of a movie
yeah,
that plays around
yeah,
a lot
yeah.
in a heroic bloodshed kind of way.
Counterfeit money's fun because yeah, that took a very 70s like nitty gritty, like here's how it actually happens. Counterfeit money's fun because it definitely delves into the kind of like the theme of like who's the victim of this crime. Like mm-hmm. why can't you just let me go? Like fucking money's like, you're just the system. Like I counterfeit money, like I'm doing it for something. Like
okay. Hear me out. What if you do? Because the first place my mind goes with that is that like we're in an increasingly cashless world.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah.
So if you're maybe you've got like again, this is the other thing I love in Hard Boiled is they have like the old timey gangster who's like kind of a good guy and he like takes care of his boys
yeah.
or whatever, right? Like, and that's you're like, I mean, this guy sucks too, he's a criminal. But like, do you do that? It's like there's this counterfeiter who like his way of life is changing, right? Like
mm-hmm.
this old counterfeiter or something like that, or it's like this family business or something like that, but like they are increasingly like no one wants counterfeit money
mm-hmm.
anymore because we're moving to this Venmo cashless society. And so, like, maybe they get pushed into
doing... Hey, when are you going to get onto crypto?
Here's an angle for a bad guy.
Okay.
Just like a place in terms of, I think, feels American. And then you can instantly kind of see the moral ambiguity and the difficulty. An ex-private military person. Now, they often use this thing, but, like, I feel like two people that were in the military or were cops at one point, but, like, the person who goes into private, like, fucking, like, right, we just left Afghanistan.
Oh, by the way, actually, yes, two guys, if you're going to do opposite sides, two brothers in war who were in Afghanistan or who were in the military together, they come back and one goes on to one side of the law and the other goes on to the other, but they saved each other's lives back in the war or whatever.
Yes, and one goes to private military, but I was like, pretty clearly starts doing, I mean, the moment they were doing corrupt shit in the Middle East, and when they come here, they're like, now they're doing counterfeit money or whatever.
I got a thing.
Hit me.
If you were going to do, like, I think about that movie American Gangster, which is about the real guy who started running heroin from Vietnam to America. You could do overseas, like in your prologue or whatever, they discovered some massive cache of drugs or a drug field or something like that. And then when you get back to America, one of the guys goes on to become a cop or a private investigator or something. And the other one who falls on hard times, like, starts becoming a drug runner or something that. I don't know. That's an angle I could see.
What if you did the good guy is a member of military police that investigates military people?
Oh, right? Interesting. Because
then you could do, like, they are back home, and then it's like, you know, is this a problem for the police itself, or is it a military matter? And then it's like the person who's going after it is, like, again, ex-military, like, member of theirs, but, like, somebody who is, like, and their point is, like, they saw shit happen in the military, and, like, yes, they're, like, you know, somebody like your snitch or whatever it is, like, I'm here to make sure, like, we are honorable.
Okay, hear me out. He's got this military MP, right? Mm-hmm. He's your good guy. You see... There's this crew of bank robbers, and they're using Green Beret tactics.
Yeah.
They're using secret special forces tactics to hit these banks.
Yes.
Right? And you're like, shit, these guys are ex-military, right? They have to be.
Yes.
And then they call up this military police guy or this military police person.
Attaché to come on board. Yeah, to and the
they're
FBI
like, they're like, we need you to help us figure it out.
Oh, just for like consulting, essentially.
Yeah,
he's not even responsible for the case.
Yeah, it's then he recognized, but then maybe he has to go undercover because one of the guys gets killed on the mission, right? Or something like that. Do you know what I mean? Now he's got to go undercover and then he realizes what they're stealing all the money for. Do you know what I mean? Like one of those?
Okay, that's getting there. I like
the idea. Could be a little gumbo, right?
Okay, all right.
That's cool. That gets into some good stuff. Also, like, in terms of, like, yeah, you get, like, military people know how to shoot guns. So, like,
they're really good at robbing banks or whatever, or hitting armored car heists.
Okay, yeah, what's, like,
armored cars isn't bad.
Armored cars
is, like, a specific type of thing.
What are they stealing? Yeah, what's, like, a cool modern, like... By the way,
armored car driver and money handler, another interesting dynamic for a sort of modern Western stagecoach kind of thing.
True. We all saw that video from South Africa of the driver and the guy after where they're trying to get run off the road that went viral a few months ago, right?
I did not see that, but it sounds crazy.
Yeah.
The other thing you get is like this like sense of envy from one side to the other, like, again, not to get in that world, but yes, there's a generic sort of like the wife and the child and the greener pasture on the side of being on the good side. Like, it's easy to have honor and all this stuff when you're just fucking living a good life and you got everything you want, right? Like, yes, there is a sense of like if this person came back and like is military,
what if
MP,
they're trying,
got a stable
what is,
job like
what
are
if
they
they're
getting
trying to get
or,
the money to pay for like crippling medical debt for like their parents, right? You know what I'm saying? Like that's when I think about like debt in America and I think about the wealth and where things are, it's like the fact that like one bad, you know, thing happening to you health-wise can just ruin your financial future given the way things are, right?
I would lean towards, I actually think that's one of the difference with like, I love Ed Harris and the Rock. It's like, for example, in Raging Fire that we just watched, like most of these are bloodshed movies. It's like, the bad guys don't need to be doing a good thing, usually to understand why they feel justified doing it. It's pretty, like, the number of times people watch, like, a high-speed chase or whatever, and they're like, huh, I was fucking pumped when he got away, because they're like, fuck the police. Like, in Raging Fire, like, they're just doing crime. The reason they're doing crime is because they were put in prison by the police, and then one of their friends, they all lost their job, and one of their friends committed suicide. Like, they hate the police. Like, you understand, like they were betrayed. They were betrayed by the higher ups. Like, they are like, the moral code doesn't work. If you act like a good person, you get screwed. So therefore, we rob.
If, like, you were going to do then this Green Beret team or whatever, not Green Berets, but they were like some sort of Black Ops Special Forces team, got sent in somewhere and the whole thing was a clusterfuck.
Yes.
And then they got burned and disavowed.
Yes.
Right. And then they came back to America.
And the VA isn't taking care of anything.
Yeah. So they came back to America. The government completely disavowed that they were even in the military, that they were even part of anything. Right.
They were a scapegoat for some.
They fought for their country and then they got fucked over, essentially. Yes. And so now they are having hard times.
Fuck, you know, Uncle
like,
Sam.
The bank is repossessing the guy's house, or like they got the medical debt or whatever. And so then they've started doing crimes for the mob. Or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
That could be an interesting angle.
Yes. It's a good where they like, I don't know, like what? Like they rob like they fucking art dealers. They fucking rob high value pieces of art because like they're the best at it or something. I wouldn't do like the mob. They like sell it to like fucking like.
I mean, it doesn't matter, right? Like one of the things that you see as a plot point of these is like, oh, they're robbing the, you know, the reason for the money is less important that, right? Like as you were saying, it's like you don't really care that. It's like it doesn't need that. It's like, oh, it's using it to pay for something that's important to them.
Yeah,
it's
but
like,
you want to come up with, but you need to care, right? Like you need to care. Like you need something. They have to cross a moral line. Again, we're already falling into the American trap of making the bad guys too likable. Like
yeah,
the, yeah. You need to like, yes,
that's
what is
fair.
The like
yeah, yeah.
In Hard Boiled, you feel bad for Tony Leung.
Mad Dog's a piece of shit, but you're like, oh, like he's a person. That's yeah. all it is at yeah. the end. It's like he is a person. Like he's not
you
willing to kill
here's
civilians.
What it is. Here's what it is. It's like they have a code.
Yes.
Right? You don't need to agree with what they do, but you do need to get it. You
Mad
need to
Dog's
take a look
code
at it. I
is
get it.
Civilians shouldn't die. He's okay with robbing and killing cops.
Yeah,
but like
yeah,
the
yeah.
moment like Mad Dog, one of the big villain, like
what
the most badass villain.
The
Heavy
yeah.
is like just not willing to go that next level to kill innocent people in a hospital. Like that's all it is. Like, and that's enough for that sequence to have fucking real weight when the two of them are standing there and they wait for the, I mean, that moment's so fucking awesome. They just both wait for the civilians to leave the room before they kill each other, before they start fighting. It's not as dramatic as the killer, but the main bad guy in Hard Boiled is just a piece of shit who wants to abuse the medical system to make a ton of money
to keep the ball rolling.
Yeah,
it feels like if we're gonna go with this bank robbery thing and we go with these guys who've been screwed over, and you do, it feels like I don't want it to be a heist movie. Do you know what I mean?
No,
in the sense
no,
that
no,
I don't
no.
think this is like we start and the guys get the job and then they do the job and it goes wrong or whatever. I think your status quo, the two sides are, let's say you have these two brothers in arms, right?
Mm-hmm.
One of whom has joined the law and one of whom has joined the crooks.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy who's joined the crooks has been running this crew that is doing all sorts of crazy shenanigans for the mob. They're like a hit squad slash heist crew, whatever, right? They're like essentially like a strike team. And it feels like your inciting incident, like I said, is the crossing of the moral line.
Mm-hmm.
Someone gets killed that is an innocent. Somebody get to that job. We said there's no clean breaks when
yeah.
it comes to this stuff. So it's like, yes, that's the risk every time you go and do something like this, right? And you do like, maybe you're sort of honorable thief, the person running the crew. He's not the one who pulls the trigger,
mm-hmm.
right? But, you know, one of the hothead rookie of the heist team kills an innocent person and he covers for them, but he takes responsibility for it because this is his team.
Yes.
But that winds up being the thing that sparks the outrage that gets them on the news, right? Because he gets his team out of there, or because he tries to save the woman or something like that, you know, they get picked up on the security cameras or whatever. They forget to wipe the tapes. In the chaos of it, now their faces are known. Or like even just not their faces, but their tactics are seen.
Their signature, the way the guy draws his sidearm.
Yes, it's signature. Like, this is like, oh shit, this is, we think this is this team.
Right.
Right?
Okay, I like that. So to bring it back to this very simple, like I like this, let's just stick with it, because there's certain like, kind of stuff, like I think what we're getting at, because there's people on opposite sides of the law that team together, like that's like the killer.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like what we're getting to, which is a fun one, I always love this, is two best friends that end up on opposite sides of the law. So like, and in that case, there are essentially two things that happen. It's like two best friends end up on opposite sides of the law. That's usually like something happened, and that's often shown in a flashback because that's kind of like your status quo. Usually the inciting incident of the movie is the person on the wrong side of the law does something unforgivable.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if they never killed an innocent person in a bank robbery, maybe they would arrest each other and they would still end up friends, you know, talk to
yeah,
each other
yeah,
in prison.
Yeah, but he does,
but something
yes,
happens
right.
too far, but they both have so much emotional like trauma over this. So it's like, mm-hmm. who are these two friends and how they show up on opposite ends of the law, their military or whatnot? Like that's because mm-hmm. that's where the heart is. That's where you care about them.
Yes, yes, yes. So which seems like it would be something that happened in the war.
Yes,
right?
It's like, usually some sort of injustice. Sometimes it's as simple as like one friend was poor and like didn't have a chance and so like got caught up in gangs while the other one went to the police academy. And like,
it feels like to me it would be that the guy who winds up on the wrong side of the law, joins this criminal crew, he takes the fall for something
mm-hmm.
during the war that was everybody's fault.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean? Or like he does something to save the other person, but
yes.
then gets dishonorably discharged. Do you know what I mean? Who they get burned, and then you have this other person who got to, because their friend gave up something for them, gets to go on, go back home, get a career working for whoever at the FBI. Yes. Let's say the FBI gets a job with the FBI, you know, and it's like, you know, like has kind of put that life behind him as like a desk jockey at the FBI or something like that, you know, who's, you know, like reluctant to pick up a gun again. And owes a debt to this person who is now off robbing banks. Like, that feels like there's a conflict there. Do you know what I mean?
Yes. That's getting there. So it's like, I like the villain having done something even like morally questionable to save, or essentially more or less is responsible for the good guy having the life that they
have. Exactly. Even if you could even do, if you wanted to be in an honorable thing, you would be, they got orders to do something bad. And then the bad guy is the one who defied the military. He's the one who was like, I'm not doing that. Like, we're not doing that. I'm not sending my guys in to die. Do you know what I mean? And was the one who took the heat for it, you know, to protect his team and just save this guy's life by doing that.
Oh, so which resulted in a dishonorable discharge and tumbled him down the path. But he did the morally righteous thing. He refused a shitty order, but the military bureaucracy fucked him. And when he got the civilian life, the fact that he was dishonorably discharged.
Everybody called him a dishonorable discharge.
Yeah,
you're a traitor.
This, that, and the other, you know? Like,
but
maybe
he wasn't
even
a coward at all, dude.
Maybe even did some time. Do you know what I mean?
Like, and then his friend, like, wasn't there for him, you know, and his excuse would be like, I didn't know. And also, like, I was still in the war. Like, I was still doing stuff. I got swept away and doing other stuff. Like, I'm sorry I didn't do enough to, like, help you out or whatever.
Yeah, but then there's also a little bit of it. They wound up trying to become a rising star in the FBI.
No, absolutely. There's
and
a, some sin on their end.
Scene associating with this criminal and kind of turn their back
on him. What you need. You need that one moment. Again, they do this so well in Raging Fire. But
they wanted to call him as a character witness in his trial.
Yes.
And he didn't show up.
Yes.
He wouldn't show up because it was going to, the FBI was like, you can't fucking do this for this guy.
No, you know what I mean? He was going to, and then on his way walking in, his superior is like, you're going to throw your career away associating with this guy?
He's not going to change the outcome.
Yes, like, it's not going to change the outcome.
The fucking,
think about your career.
Of the courthouse,
your freaking
dude.
Wife is pregnant. X, Y, and Z. You're going to throw it all away. And then, yes, he didn't have the guts to go in and stand up for his friend.
And you know what you do is you do a thing where it's like, he thought.
Oh,
his,
yeah. I
you
love
know what you
it.
Do? You think his friend never. It's this classic like misunderstanding. It's like, he doesn't think his friend, like the way he was told, is you want that moment where he doesn't think his friend ever knew that he like decided not to do it. But it's like, you have that moment where it's like in the court, like his friend went to the bathroom and then like through the glass window, he saw his friend talking to, you know, the superior and then turning around and leaving. He's like, I knew you were in the courthouse that day. Mm-hmm. I saw you. You turned around and left me. You know, it's
like he never knew.
He's like, I watched you. I fucking saw the face of a coward. You know, when he turned around in the mirror, you get a slow motion fade as he's
okay,
like,
okay, this is very good. This is cooking. Okay. So this is great. All right. So we've got the beef.
Oh, here's the great. Too, if you've been dishonorably discharged, you cannot have a gun.
Ooh.
Like ever?
With this characterization of service, a dishonorable discharge, this is rendered only by conviction at a general court martial for various serious offenses. So murder, treason, espionage, desertion. Anyway, so it's like anything that calls for dishonorable discharge is regarded as shameful. In many states, a dishonorable discharge is deemed the equivalent of a felony conviction with attendant loss of civil rights. In some states, those who have been dishonorably discharged may be also barred from voting, holding office, doing jury duty. Federal law prohibits possession of firearms or ammunition by those who have been dishonorably discharged per the Gun Control Act of 1968.
Yeah, you do that. This absolutely.
I like desertion. Like, I don't quite know how you get it. It's like, that's what they are accused. That's what they are given the crime of. And maybe he's even going back to save his friend or something, but it's like, they were called deserters in this thing in order for the scapegoat for whatever happened, because as they were looking for something or trying to get something, you know, some disaster happened, they like accidentally, like, you know, killed an innocent person or lost, you know, important
overseas. You mean,
yeah, overseas.
I think the idea that it was a disobeying an immoral command, and that it was like he took the heat for it,
yes,
and even like, you know, lied to the team and told them their orders were something else,
yes,
so that he would be the only one to take responsibility for it or whatever.
Oh,
do you know what I mean?
Good.
So he fell on his sword so that to protect everybody else from something that he knew was wrong. And then so now he's on the chopping block, and then his friend is pissed about it because he found out the truth and wants to go stand up for his friend. He's like, you're going to throw your whole career away.
Okay, that's good. But overseas, we're saying, right?
This is the overseas thing. Yeah.
Yes, I would say that he got an order that he thought was immoral and didn't want to do. And then in order to try to protect his whatever group,
unit,
he told them something else. It was like, oh, we're ordered to go this way.
Yes.
And some bad thing happened or whatever happened because of that order. And yes, they are all charged for it. Like, you all went in the opposite direction. You all deserted. And they got fucking dishonorably discharged and court-martialed for desertion.
Oh, slow down. The idea is that this guy took the fall for his friend.
I'm just trying to give him the charge that he's given. Like, disobeying a moral order is like, I feel like most people be like, this
you
guy's cool.
Said, and really quick, to be clear, this is one where we can just sort of gloss over this. You are allowed to disobey immoral
orders. That's what I'm saying. Yes. I think he's charged with what he is known as, what his reputation is, why he has no friends left in the military, why people, when they hear he's dishonorably discharged for desertion, they all think he's a fucking loser.
And that's what
he did in Afghanistan or wherever, was disobey a order he thought was immoral. But like,
yes, it can't be like they were like, go massacre these civilians, and he said no. It's got to be something more ambiguous.
And then what they punished him for was,
and you can wrap that up in like the brass in charge at that time decided to make a scapegoat out of him and
he got screwed over, you call the movie Deserter or something. He got charged with desertion, and because he didn't let them know about it, he was able to take the fall.
Yeah,
or maybe he even lied and said that none of them knew about it. Yeah, and then like,
but there's even something I like about, I guess the way I like about him being accused of desertion is like, it starts getting into that moral code, because like it reminds me of this really good intro to a Hardcore History episode where he talks about like, who's the guy before Churchill?
Chamberlain.
He essentially brings up, is like, you know who's never called heroes are the people that choose not to fight, when often they save way more lives than the people who fight. And it's like, I think there's a very valid, I mean, that's the red badge of courage. Like, deserting can be the morally correct thing, but it is something that no society, no person will ever look at as a deserter and be like, that person did the right thing. It's just seen as, because like, it has to be seen as wrong. Otherwise, like, military doesn't work. But it's like, no, like, the moral courage it could take to desert a war, to go against like your own country, might be the morally correct thing with a certain ethic. Yeah. So it's like,
whatever the details of it are, that's essentially the backstory. And then, his friend wanted to stand up for him in court and then chickened out.
Okay. So he's in, so now it's 10 years later or whatever.
He served time.
He served time.
Met up with unsavory contacts.
Met up with an honorable crook who looked out for him.
Sure.
That's the person he winds up working for.
Yeah.
Right? Or
sure.
Who, a guy he thinks is honorable or something
Sure.
And then you do that. Yes. He comes out and he trains, his fuck it mode is he trains a crew in military tactics to start robbing banks and shit like that.
Yeah. There's something really interesting about the idea of someone taking the lessons that have been drilled into them from military service and then applying them against the country. You've seen that here and there.
So you do that. Something goes wrong. They get caught on camera during the act of the moral transgression. And again, it would be a thing where the guy, your deserter, shoots an innocent person to protect someone on his team, is I think how you would do it, right? Or something like that. Or just in the chaos, it's like the killer, in the chaos and the gunfire, he kills someone.
Here's some extra heat. I think our good guy thinks the villain's dead. I think everybody thinks the villain's dead. Like, at some point, like, he fled the country and maybe there's something that happened, because I think we get that extra craziness. Like, I feel like the good guy lost everything. He lost his family. Like, his wife, like, committed suicide or something drastic. And, like, the good guy, the hero of the story, is, like, raising his child.
Like, that. What?
Sorry, Matt, you're mixing up words there. You're saying the bad guy, you think, has lost their kid, so the good guy's raising
The good guy thinks the bad guy's dead. It's not like he's known this guy's been alive for, like, 10 years or whatever. It's something that he's felt guilt about for a long time. And then, like, when he sees him, he's like, I thought you were dead. Opera. That's what I'm getting at.
Maybe. I'm not saying no. I just want just to drill down on the plot thing for a second and then go back to the emotion. So what we're saying is, does your main character, is he now just trying to catch the guy? Is he trying to go undercover? What is his goal?
The start of that is usually, it's just the case. And it's like, he is put on the case that he doesn't know yet it is his friend. Like, there is some string of robberies or some big robbery happened, or like a fucking nuclear arms were taken. Like, this could be something cool like that. Like, something dangerous is, he's on a case. Like, and we know, or before the other characters know, that the two of them are on the opposite side. And then at some point, the midpoint of the movie is usually like, there's this like, oh,
a heist goes wrong and they meet for the,
you better not be the bad guy I'm tracking down. He's like, what if I am? And it's like that doc, essentially, is what happens.
Okay. The other way you could do it is that he does know it's his friend. And then that's the sort of like into act three or into act two or whatever, is the like, I'm going to go face my past, go catch this guy.
I mean, you could. The reason is usually you'll have like, you want the main character to have some sort of like, whether it's Raging Fire or White Storm 2, it's like they're usually like known as like some really good cop. It's like their normal motivation is to solve this crime, because it also shows you that here's why you don't want to do that, because you don't want the main motivation to be, oh, I'm trying to get revenge on my friend, I'm trying to capture my friend. Their main motivation is, pure.
The moral, yes. Someone got killed.
I want to stop the drug dealers.
Yeah, then the complication is
it gets caught up in the emotion.
Okay, yes, you're right. Okay. So
it's a very simple one. Usually it's like,
I want to do the right thing. Yeah. Yes. If in this version where, again, it's like you've got the square, right? Who's like, again, this FBI guy who's tracking. Yeah, okay. And then, yes, it's complicated by his complex feelings for this other person.
Yes.
All right. I buy all that.
Hi, I'm Biz.
And I'm Teresa.
And we're the hosts of One Bad Mother, a podcast about parenting. Parenting is hard, and we have no advice, but we do see you doing it.
Honk if you like to do it. Didn't we have a bumper sticker a while back that was like, honk if you did it? That's what it was.
I think it was honk if you're doing it.
Why did we not ever make those? Those
we did make them. I think they're still in the Max Fun store.
Honk, honk, you're doing it.
Thanks, Biz. So are you.
Each week, we'll be here to remind you that you're doing a good job.
You can find us on MaximumFun.org. Honk, honk,
toot, toot.
Is this a two-hander, or is it mostly from the cop's POV? Is it mostly from the agent's POV?
Mostly from the agent's POV.
It's mostly from the agent's POV, but you get a good chunk from...
Yeah, you want to see it from the other side. By the way, Easy Relationship is the bad guy, our good guy's former mentor, commanding officer of the unit. He's the one who took the fall for it. You know, like he was the one, right? Like that, all that stuff. You got all that.
Okay, yes. Now I see where you're getting, because then you need to beef that up with stuff. So yes,
here's an example. Here, maybe you could do this. How about this? Their relation, he's his brother-in-law. Because then there's no taking his wife. It's like his sister lost her husband and he lost his best friend. Mm-hmm. So he's good friends with his sister. He comes and he checks in on his sister and his nephew. Mm-hmm. And he's essentially raised them, and she hasn't remarried since then. And like, he's part of his best friend's family.
Okay.
I'm just giving you a reason of why he's raising
his
son.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay, sure. Yes. It doesn't need to be
he went through adoption papers.
Was going to say is this is some next level face-off shit. Is that you do that the bad guy is like, this cop's a problem. We need to fucking scare the shit out of him. Go kidnap his kid. And then your criminal goes and kidnaps this kid and doesn't realize it's his own son. Do you know what I mean? Do you know what I mean, bro? Like one of those. Okay, like you can imagine this happened 10 years ago, right? And the kid is 10 now. It was a baby. He doesn't know what happened to him. He doesn't know what his kid
didn't
looks
even
like.
Know he had a kid.
Dramatic irony. That's what I'm saying.
No, this is good shit. This is like, they literally, I mean, again, there's only so many
you
variations
can mix human
of families
beings with human beings.
Yeah, there's only so many combinations of families. So
it's a very small deck of cards that you can get.
They do this in Yakuza 2 or 3, but it's perfect. It is like literally the guy does not realize that the girl that is also his daughter. Mm-hmm. And it's like, so yes, you would do his best friend's wife was pregnant and he didn't know yet. And
it's
then
a secret. It's going to be a whole secret.
Dishonorably discharged and disappeared. Everybody thought he committed suicide or something. Yeah. And then he came in and checked on. They ended up falling in love. And then like, yeah, it also it's just, I know, I mean, unfortunately, the woman is essentially a prop here, but it's like, it's also, it shows that he is this really good man, right? Mm-hmm. He's like, I don't care if it's not my actual child. Like, I love her. I love this kid. I'm raising it as my own. And then it's like, there's this connection to the past or whatever. And then he doesn't realize he's taken his, and then that extra level when he finds out that it's like, you took everything from me.
You took my family.
It's like I was trying to help them. I cared about them because I loved you. And this also this element is like, the wife is essentially just him. He loves his brother so much. Mm-hmm. He loves his friends so
much.
Let's
come up with something for this wife to do in the story so that we can sort of like, do you know what I mean? Look, I agree with you that the drama is between these two guys. But like, I'll be honest, like the killer's fucking misogynist as fuck. Like the girl is a prop in that movie. Like, I think there's a way to do this that doesn't make these other characters props in the story. That's all I'm saying. And that's one of the reasons that I think like Teresa Moe works better in Hard Boiled than the girl does in The Killer. Like she's part of the story and she's a cop. Like again, it was a big deal that John Woo had a female Hong Kong police officer shoot somebody. They weren't allowed to carry guns at the time.
Yes.
It does, by the way, point out one of the funny things about all these movies, which is that secretly it is a movie about a bromance, right? This is about these two people.
It is a brotherhood
story. Also the secret of all love triangles is that one person needs to be the loser of a love triangle. Mm-hmm. And then the secret is why the women are often props is because the two important people in this love triangle are the two men.
You're saying someone's got to be, who's the guy in Twilight?
Yeah, it's like that.
Or PETA in
Werewolf
the Hunger
Boy
Games.
Sucks. Like he's not a real character. He's a prop. Like he's a prop character because it's also about Edward and Bella. And then yes, PETA. Mm-hmm. Actually, I would say the other guy is the prop. The other guy's just like big macho bro. That represents like the more traditional like hot boyfriend character, and PETA's actually like PETA goes through a lot in those movies and in the books.
Let's keep playing this. I'm putting a flag on the play. Yes. I think the answer will come to us as we keep tracking this down. Okay, so.
Because the reveal that his friend's alive is a good moment.
Yes, the reveal that he's the friend's alive. Because the dramatic irony of him kidnapping his son or kidnapping his daughter, like as a, you know, like having to do that and then having a relationship with this person.
Oh, here's a good thing. Just to play a little bit in the again, like a really good movie should have some elements like it. We won't get into the full nuance of it, obviously, in this 20 minutes that we have left or whatever. But I think you could get a lot of good stuff out of this situation, which is. When this situation happened, when his friend got dishonorably discharged, court-martialed, he went back to the FBI. He left the Middle East and came back to America and had a good job. His friend committed suicide, escaped, died or whatever, and stayed in the Middle East as private military. He stayed overseas and he saw the real shit. He wasn't just head down back in America being a good cop doing things right. Like he fucking had no choice and he stayed and he became.
I thought you said he deserted.
What was he doing for 10 years when his friend thought he was dead?
Oh, so you're saying he deserted, changed his identity, became a mercenary or something?
Mercenary
like that.
In the Middle East for many, many years and now has come back to America.
Joined the French Foreign Legion. They'll take
whatever
anyone.
It is. And now he's back in America. He's fucking doing bank robberies because, again, this is 10 years later. And he's like, you just left me there. You don't know what happened over there. You know what, the military, you aren't the good guys, like, sort of thing. Anyways, again, the nuance of it. But the point being is, like, he fucking became a badass, bad dude. Like, he became private military.
Yeah, whatever the backstory is, yes. Because, yes, I guess in the other version, it was when he went to prison, right? Like, that was kind of the thing. But, like, if he vanished, obviously he didn't go to prison, is what you're saying.
Yes, and also just, like, private military guys who have nothing to do now in America is, like, a pretty common, like, some of those white supremacists who get caught, like, wanting to kill the governor or some of them are like, oh, they used to be military guys. They kind of don't really have anything to do now, and they have some mission.
All right.
That's all a backstory, which is great because now, again, it's simple. Like, these movies are ultimately, the plots
are
simple.
By the way, I think I fixed our female character thing. I wouldn't do this third person in this love triangle or this love triangle, this person in this relationship triangle isn't the wife. It is the daughter. And let's say it's a teenage daughter, right? And you do that, like, again, like maybe the wife had died or like they had been divorced or estranged or something like that before that. So his daughter, his baby daughter or whatever, was living with her grandparents. And so then he came and helped out and has become like a surrogate father to her or something like that.
Okay.
But then you do, so like, his emotional drama at the beginning is his wrestling with his headstrong teenage daughter who reminds him of his best friend. And then you do, then they're like, oh, you need to go kidnap this person. Do you know what I mean? Is that maybe a thing? Could that be a thing? I feel like that's at least a character who has more going on because then she's in a relationship. What's, again, what's fascinating is we're like, oh, let's do this action movie. And all we are talking about so far is core relational drama, right?
But that's what these movies are. That's all these movies
because
are.
Because these movies' plots are so simple to the point where it's like a lot of these movies could benefit from like a little bit more juice, but like they are essentially like, I'll tell you, like having just watched a million of them, they are essentially bad guys do a crime. The second act is the good guy be like, how do they do that crime? There's like one or two fight scenes. And by the way, the fight scenes in between that, literally Donnie Yen just fights through an entire town of people just to get to the bad guy to tell him, like, I think I know what you're up to. Like, nothing happens.
Okay, okay.
And then they solve the case at the end.
Okay, all right. So, all right, just we need to... Okay, so we've got two former brothers in arms.
Yes.
One of whom deserted for a morally righteous reason to protect his fellow soldiers.
Yes.
And took the fall.
And was abandoned by the U.S. military and court-martialed and his life was ruined.
Scapegoated by the U.S. military and court-martialed and maybe fled after his court-martial.
Yes,
maybe
he had a chance for a different life. Somebody gave him an opportunity to go join some private
the
military.
The Russians said you sign up for a five-year contract with the Russian Foreign Legion, you can be a Russian citizen after you
he
serve.
He ran away after getting court-martialed.
Yes, everybody assumed he was dead.
The main character wanted to stand up for his buddy at the court-martial, but chickened out.
Yes.
And then after this guy ran away, and the other guy went home, he adopted his friend's baby daughter.
Yes.
However that works. So because she was living with the grandparents, because the mom was always out of the picture, and so he adopted the baby daughter.
Or again, if you wanted to give, just bear with me, it's not that common. Like, if you wanted to give the, I don't know what her whole plot is, but like, again, you could do... His best friend married his sister. Like, that's like how, like, he's his brother-in-law. Like, it's even closer. They're literally family.
And when his brother, scene with the
and
wedding.
When his brother-in-law died, he's just still in his...
I like that more. Yes, you're right.
He's still in his sister's life. And he's, every day he remembers. And like, she's like, she's like lost her husband. And like, she maybe fucking blames her brother deep down for this thing.
No, but no, we want it to be the other guy's daughter. What are we doing?
Stop. Will, you're confusing yourself there.
Okay.
Matt is saying that this bad guy's sister, he married the good guy's sister.
Let's just call them names. Matt is the good guy. Freddy's the bad guy. Okay.
Wilma is the...
Freddy the villain
married
my sister and had a child.
Wilma. Freddy married Wilma and had a child with Wilma.
Called Dorothy.
Yeah.
Okay. And then Freddy died in the war. And 10 years later, I still have a relationship with my sister and I'm pseudo raising my niece because I care about my family. I'm part of my family's life.
Yes.
And then here's how you get her involved. And this is fucking cool as shit because they're a fucking badass family. Matt is a fucking FBI detective, right? Because he's fucking cool.
But the mom's a cop.
Wilma is a fucking armored car driver.
Okay.
And when the guy's robbing, she doesn't know that. At one point, he robs from his old wife. I'm just saying that she's fucking badass too. And you get a fucking cool scene where like fucking families in armored trucks and they're fucking like you fucking didn't tell your own wife that you were like, I thought you were
no,
dead.
This is very good. This is very good. Cause here's what you do. Here's what you do. Here's what you do. Here's what you do. This is very good though. Yes. The wife who was also in the military is she drives an armored car now.
Yes.
Yes. Okay. So this is very good. Yes. She witnesses the first robbery. She's a witness.
Yes.
It's at the bank, and it's not fucking some of the video camera. She sees the moves. She he doesn't recognize her.
And nobody believes her because they're like, you just still miss your husband.
Yeah, she's like, that was my husband.
My dead husband.
My dead husband, your best friend.
Yes.
And he's like, but what are you talking about?
Sis, sometimes I see him too. Like, I miss him too. Like, I wish I didn't like how it all went down.
Yeah. The armored car thing goes, and the guy kills her
coworker, doesn't kill her,
and he points a gun at her, and they know, they look and they know, and he stops and she knows he's in masks, but he knows she knows, but he never takes off the mask and turns and runs away. It's like, oh, she knows.
Yeah, they literally kill everybody in the armored car except for her, and in fact they even have security camera, and she's like, I don't know what happened, I think they just missed me, and they literally see that like the guy points at her and puts it down. It's like, that was my husband. There you go, that's some fucking heat going on.
My wife.
And then you do that.
Oh, it's just the daughter's just of the age asking about what happened to her dad. It's like literally the daughter's like 8 years old. It's like, what happened to my dad? It's like right at that time. That's like a good way to introduce her character. She's like, I don't want to talk about, like, you know, your dad disappeared.
She
tells a lie. Your dad was a hero in the army.
It's
not a lie. He was a hero.
There you go.
Oh shit. Oh shit. Oh, we found the NOS. Here we go. Yes. Okay. So the mom's Wilma's the armored car driver, and this is great because you also get the scene where she's driving her daughter to school with the minivan, but she's using like she knows how to. She's a person who drives an armored car for a living because she can fucking handle.
Oh,
it.
You want this?
Minivan car chase halfway through, they're trying to whack the mom. It's like fucking Patriot Games. She's just doing burnouts and shit in this minivan, fucking shooting the clock out the side of the window.
They do this shit where it's like, mommy, why do we take a different way to school every day? It's like, you have to keep your routes different, honey, just in case. You're just like, damn, she's good. She's fucking serious about her family safety.
Okay, the only other character you're missing is then it's very simple. So it's like Freddy, the villain, the guy who's robbing banks
like
or whatever.
He's like,
has a boss that is also like, why did that job go poorly?
Yes.
And then because you need that extra, because I actually think this is the sort of movie where the bad guy ultimately does the right thing right before he dies. I think the bad guy,
one of those ones where it's like, if anyone on any of my crews has any weaknesses, I kill them. He's that guy.
Because then essentially the redeeming moment is like, they solve the crime, they take out the bad guy, Freddy dies, but then like the kid asks what happened to the dad, and they tell him, your dad was a hero.
They
give her the good stories, like, he was our best friend, you know, and stuff happens.
Was he a good man?
He was a good man. Yes, he was a good man.
Craps. Oh, then do that scene where he gets to call his daughter as he's dying. Do you know what I mean?
Was my dad a good man? It's like, he died as one. It's like, not yet. It's not, obviously, I'm not going to lie. It's like, he wasn't always a good man, but know what? He died as a good man. He changed in the end.
Okay. This is very good. This is fucking, wow, we got it. This is good. And I'll tell you, man, the sister is perfect. Because brotherhood, sisterhood, it's the same
drama. Yeah, you get the stuff. It's just a family drama. It's literally just, it's a brother-in-law and his sister and his niece.
That power play where like he goes to talk to his ex-wife. It's like, don't tell your brother that I'm here. Do you know what I mean? She's like, I have to tell him. You fucking killed an innocent person, but I don't want to because I love you.
That's good.
Okay. All right. So just to quickly try to in the last 5 minutes, just blast through this plot really quickly. Okay, so your first act, we see the backstory. We see the drama overseas.
And to be fair, this is where most of Rogue Bloodshed movies fail, because they actually don't ever blast through the plot. They kind of just move through various gunfights, and the plot is always a little bit rough.
Okay. Yes. So you have this desertion thing happens.
Yes.
You have the court martial. The wife is in court, right? She hasn't told him. Found out she's pregnant. She hasn't told him yet.
No.
This is all told through moody flashbacks, like Face Off. Like, he's doing some other case that's like reminding him of it, and he's up in sweats, and he's like thinking about it.
The preamble is that he chickened out in the courtroom.
Yeah.
She never told him he was a father, you know, because she didn't think he could take it, you know, and then he ran away.
Yes.
And then we flash forward, right?
Yes.
He's working in the FBI. He's helping take care of his sister's kid. Mm-hmm. She's an armored car driver and he's a bank robber.
Yeah.
Right?
Can I make it any more obvious?
All of their paths cross when he robs the bank while his wife is there.
Yes.
And he's supposed to kill everybody in the car, but he doesn't kill her.
Yes.
And then they're like, what's going on? Right? Like, so this is.
Oh, you didn't do that. By the way, they weren't supposed to kill anybody. It was supposed to go super smooth, but his wife's such a fucking badass that she fucking like ducks out of there, causes a car crash, car chase.
No
and
witnesses.
Then they are forced to essentially kill everybody and leave no witnesses. But then he realizes the badass who got away from them is his wife. So yes. He leaves her there.
Okay. So now. You do.
Fucking big old mess for all the characters.
He gets the case at the FBI, yes. Right? And then she realizes it's him,
yeah.
Right? And he's going to try to break this case, but he's conflicted because
it's his
friend.
Even bring it up. By the way, I love this because they even say like, hey, are you sure you can take this case on? Like your wife was involved. Isn't that emotional? She's like, she's fine. It's just a bank robbery. It happens.
It's not
it's
his
like
wife.
10 times. I mean, his sister.
Yeah.
But it's like 10 times more emotional because they don't realize like they're already asking. He's like, can you handle a case and got emotion too? He's like, nothing bothers me anymore. Ever since
I've shut down my emotions. That's my character.
Ever since I lost my best friend, I shut down my emotions, yeah. Not knowing that the bad guy's his best friend.
Yes.
Good shit. He's a church man. He goes to church every Sunday, too.
Yeah,
church for some reason, because all his movies do.
So now you do the bad guy, the real bad guy, yeah. Anthony. Anthony tells Freddy, hey, that lady's a problem. You got to take her out, right? Or like, you got to kidnap her kid, personally.
I like take her out first. Mm-hmm. That's what he's told to do.
You got to take her out.
Because that pushes the villain to have to reveal himself. Because he's like, hi, I'm back. You need to leave town, otherwise I have to kill you.
Yeah.
Then he finds out he has a kid he didn't know about. Mm-hmm. So then he's like, well, this fucking can solve the problem. I'm taking my kid back. And I'm telling the boss, like, hey, don't worry about it. She's not a problem. I'm holding her kid hostage or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. But anyway, something along those lines, it gets complicated.
And then does your main guy go undercover?
No, I think he's just hunting him.
He's hunting him, right? Yeah. Okay.
And then,
so,
by the way, the first bank heist is clearly part one of a larger plot.
And the climax of this movie is the big heist. It is, they are robbing Fort Knox. I don't know. They're robbing something.
It's a string of heists all building up to a big heist, right? Yes. The first thing is they're stealing a classic car because it's the only car fast enough to do the later heist or whatever, right? Then, yes, you do that. The main character's connecting the dots. The drama is like everyone's secrets come out, right? So like the main character has to tell the wife that he betrayed his best friend and didn't, you know, was going to testify for him and then chickened out.
Yes.
And then has to tell his surrogate daughter, his niece, you know, like, and then so she finds out like their relationship is now on the rocks, you know, like, okay. I don't know where any of it goes.
I don't know. It's like maybe he gets discharged right before the finale. By the way, they do this perfect square of the circle in Raging Fire because he's such a straight-laced cop and like his wife gets like bomb is like placed next to her and he fucking like he literally like shoots at fellow police officers to like get them to stand back so he can save his wife. And then he has to go to court because he shot at police officers.
Internal affairs knocks and he's like, yeah, hey. You're going to need to talk to us.
And they literally look at him and he's like, essentially be like, we have to charge you. You're going to go to prison. But he's like, you know, I feel a little sick. I think we'll have this court case in 24 hours. So if you have anything left to do in 24 hours,
like,
you can
go ahead
and do it. By
the way, you're still a policeman for the next 24 hours.
It's like the perfect, like, yeah, no, you still have to be charged because like we're straight-laced police, but like also like fucking take this guy down. Anyway, it's just a cool moment.
Okay, so your midpoint is clearly it builds up to him catching his friend. And then he can't pull the trigger and the friend gets away. Right.
So what's
something like
think
that?
About it. Yeah. Cause I think the plot of like the bank stuff is easy. Is like, what's the plot of these three? Cause musical, like what's the musical sequences? Like it's essentially they're going to rob a big bank. They're fucking figuring it out. The end sequence is they robbing the big bank and everything comes to a head. But like on a character level, like I like the first thing is like he found out he never had a kid. He refuses to kill his wife. And then he finds out his best friend is back from the dead. So like, what's the next?
Look, let me pitch an ending and we can work backwards from there.
I like that.
Ending. The daughter gets kidnapped.
Mm-hmm.
All three characters, the sister,
the daughter
best
gets
friend,
kidnapped by the main
the
big
husband,
bad, by Anthony.
Yeah, Anthony captures the daughter.
Yeah.
And then Wilma, Freddie, and Matt have to all quash their beef with each other to team up, the three of them, to go into the bad guy hideout and rescue the daughter. And
this is the way you do it, is they catch Matt, stops the bank robbery, the big final bank robbery, and they have their cool, Matt and Freddy have their cool fucking macho crying, like, you know, whatever thing, and then Matt can't bring himself to kill his friend and is going to let him walk off in the night or whatever, and Anthony's like, that's all great, you had a big family reunion, but now the cops got all my money, I have your child, that cop better not be bringing that money to evidence. He's got to bring the money to me or I'm going to fucking kill your kid.
Oh, in an armored in an armored minivan.
And yes. Freddy's always ran away from problems his whole life, fucking turns around and is like, I'm going to help you save your child. You
yes, know, your daughter.
My daughter.
Yes.
You know, I'm not going to be in her life, good. But she's going to have a life, damn it. Yes. And then she comes back and the three of them off the... And he knows if he fucking turns around and goes to save his daughter, he's going to get fired from the FBI because, like, this is not protocol. Like, yes. They're like, hey, you got your daughter's held hostage. We'll fucking figure this out.
It's
like,
yeah, we'll call in dumb dipshit McGee, the yes. hostage negotiator who sucks.
And they turn around. Yes. And big dumb shitty McGee turns around and sees that all the money's gone from the evidence locker. And he's like, Matthew, yeah. like Matt and his sister and his best friend are driving an armored vehicle with yes. this money.
And then you do Anthony the cool, badass anti-hero goes out in a blaze of glory to save yes. his best friend and his wife
and to kill
their
the
new
big
kid,
bad.
Their baby. And, you know, like, yes. And then, okay, so here, I think I've got a little bit of the chess match before.
Yes.
This robbery happens. You're right. He gets a hit put on him to go kill the wife.
Yes.
Right? He goes to try to kill her. And then that's when she unmasks him. Mm-hmm. Now you've got that classic Mr. and Mrs. Smith knife fight, gun fight in the yes. house. Very sexy, very tense.
Yes.
And then the deal is, I won't kill you if you don't tell your FBI husband that I'm the robber.
Yes, yes.
And now you know, your FBI brother yeah, yeah. that I'm, you know, like, I'm the robber.
I'm the
robber,
yes.
right? And then they depart, right? So yes. now there's two lies, yes. right?
It's called two lies.
And then Charles like, you got to leave town and don't tell your brother why or whatever, yeah. right? And then you see there's that lie, but who witnessed that? The daughter.
Ooh,
and
yes.
then the daughter tells the cop,
yes,
right, and then the cop is like, I can't even trust my own sister anymore. Like, do you
yes.
know what I mean? Like,
yes.
no, I'm gonna hunt that bastard down.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Like, he's conflicted. He's like, I gotta go see if it's real. You know, so and while trying to catch him, as he's working the case, he's realizing, oh my god, it is true, and that's how he realizes where the hit is gonna be, like where the next target is gonna be, because he knows his best friend so well. And then you get that big gunfight, like they fucking cross paths, and he can't fucking stop him. He can't bring himself to shoot him, but he foils yes. the heist. And then you do the bad guy retaliates by kidnapping the daughter. The secrets between yes. the brother and the sister come spilling out, and now they hate each other and they're on the yes. outs. And then the daughter gets kidnapped and all three of them have to team up to deliver. It's in a switcheroo, super Green Beret action scene.
Yes. I feel like yes, that's great. And then the end, like Freddy dies. And then like, I feel like the very end is like this little coda, and it's Matt in prison for essentially doing the same thing Freddie did back in the day.
Yes.
He takes the fall, and then who shows up to talk to him in prison? It's his sister and his niece, and they're talking about, you know, school day or whatever it is. It's like he took the fall.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's
yeah,
like, yeah,
yeah
no,
yeah,
like
yeah, yeah.
they are the one of the same. It's just like they know each other now.
Woo!
That's dope.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, it's not bad for hours. This thing's ironed out, bad. But like I got there's some emotions there. That's what I want.
Yeah.
Some tears going on.
Yeah. The sister adds a very good
yes,
heat.
That's a good
and
angle.
Her being the bank robber and like
the
her
wheels.
Getting, yeah, the
yes,
wheels.
We add, yes, you know, that's the thing. It's
oh,
like,
I mean, like if you want real stupid maneuver would be like for whatever contrived reason, the deal is you have to be the getaway driver on the next heist.
yeah.
And then she has to fucking, she's like, all right, I'm going to do this one thing and then we're out, you know? And
yes.
then it's like, you could even do that. I don't
to
know.
To save her daughter or something. Yeah, there's some stuff you could do. But yeah, I like that. That's a good, again, good soap operatic.
It is.
Like,
this is soap opera.
Like angle of relationships and characters. And then it's like, yeah, it's all about what's right and what's wrong. This is good.
All right, real quick.
Okay.
Let's each say a Hong Kong blood opera word in a row, and that'll be the name of the movie.
Okay.
So I'll start.
Oh, wait. But then we respond to each other. I think we all scream it at the same time, and then we have to figure out the best order of those three words.
Okay. Ready? 3, 2, 1. Heroes.
Fire.
What did you say?
I said bullet. You said hero?
Yeah.
I said fire.
Heroes, fire, bullets.
Heroes, fire, bullets.
Yes!
That's pretty good.
Or, hear me out, bullet, fire, heroes.
Bullet, fire, heroes. Heroes,
what about
fire,
this one?
Bullets. Bullet. Almost sounds like it's
bullet
a real...
Bullet, heroes, colon, city on fire.
Bullet heroes.
Bullet heroes
is a pretty fucking cool
city on fire.
I like heroes fire bullets. Sounds
heroes
pretty,
fire
that
bullets.
That literally sounds like if you told me a John Woo, there's like, hey, have you seen that John Woo movie called Heroes Fire Bullets? I'm like, no, I need to watch that movie, and I would not question that name at all.
All right. Heroes Fire Bullets. There you go, everybody. Tell us what you thought of Heroes Fire Bullets over at twitter.com/RJStoryBreak. And while you're there, check out all the nifty fan art we got. We got some more Storybroke bangers. Our friend Storybroke hit us up with a picture of the Grouch, our Grouchy superhero. It's hilarious. And as well, a really fun poster for Stephen King's IT, one of our very early, frankly, yes, kind of clunker episodes. We also got a hilarious meme from Shrek from Shrek 2. It's like the Darth Vader party meme. And then we also got a amazing poster for the chicken from Tarzella is okay at drawing on Twitter. It's Werner Herzog, Lea Seydoux, and Alan Tudyk in our Why the Chicken Crossed the Road movie, starring Werner Herzog as the old man, which I think is pretty good casting.
That is good casting.
So check those out at twitter.com/RJStoryBreak. Head on over to bit.ly/StoryBreakFB to join our Facebook group.
And head over to MaximumFun.org to check out all the other great podcasts on the Maximum Fun Network. And sit around, listen to some of those ads. Listen to some of these show ads and check them out if they tickle your fancy. Thank you to Chad Ellis, who edits this podcast.
Thanks, Chad.
And
thanks,
we will
Chad.
See you next week. My name is Freddie Wong.
I'm Will Campos.
My name is Matt Arnold. I feel like you'd like give the gun to his daughter and be like, remember, heroes may fire bullets, but bullets don't make the hero.
Yeah, that will workshop that one.
Hi, I'm Joe Firestone.
And I'm Manolo Moreno.
And we host After Game Show, a podcast where listeners submit games and we play them regardless of quality with a dozen listeners from around the world.
We've had folks call in from as far as Sweden, South Africa, and the Philippines.
Here's an example. This is a game we called Zooey Deschanel, where you turn a celebrity's name into an animal pun. You have an example, Manolo?
Brad Gorilla Pit.
Oh, that's a pun on Gorilla Pits?
Yep.
I don't know.
That's Brad Pitt.
Oh, okay.
That's a high-quality game that you could expect.
Dr. Game Show has new episodes every other Wednesday on Maximum Fun.
Check us out.